unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth, seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
Amisha the Buddha, Amisha the Dharma, Amisha the Sangha. I sometimes like to imagine what it must have been like. Tens of millions of years ago, when the dinosaurs were the dominant form of life on land. It's a hard situation to imagine. In some respects, it's not that different from going out in the old growth forest or a natural desert or prairie. In our modern times, yet there were animals roaming around in that world, and there were lots of them that were huge, and some of them were predators, and they had very big teeth. And while, as mammals go, human beings are, reasonable size. We're not elephants, but we're also not mice or shrews. We're certainly not a blue whale. But there's many, many, many forms of mammals that are smaller than us. But in a world of dinosaurs, we wouldn't have a chance. We're not small enough to get underneath things in a way that would hide us. So there were no huge mammals in the world of the dinosaurs. There were mammals, and lots of them, but they weren't huge. They weren't elephant size. Probably they weren't even dog sized. Well, one may wonder what this has to do with Buddhism. Well, I'm talking about it to try to help us all imagine a realm of existence in which would be very difficult, probably impossible for us to survive. Yet the world in which we live today came out of that world. And that world came out of previous worlds. And in fact, they're all these worlds, successive worlds, are all part of the lifespan of this one world that we live on. And this lifespan goes back much, much further than the dinosaurs, who go back, died out about 65 million years ago, I think, and went back a couple hundred million years backwards from there. But that's still all pretty recent time in terms of the total history of a planet that's supposedly something like 4 billion years old. what I'm leading to with this is that there has been a lot of mayhem going on this planet for a long time. A lot of beings killing each other, perhaps in one lifetime, one being kills another in another lifetime. The roles get reversed in the long stream of karma and all the mixing and melding that goes on over millions and millions of years, over eons, over billions of years. All this killing and being killed, all this inherent savagery that still exists in our world . All of it is part of an incomprehensibly vast flow of cause and effect, of karma. And all the mayhem provides raw material for what can either be continuing mayhem or perhaps something that is less savage and more compassionate. Which, by the way, is not to say that there was not compassion among the dinosaurs. Human beings evolved out of animals. We are still animals. And it is possible for human beings to behave in ways that are more savage and cruel than anything any animal could ever devise. Studies with other primates have shown that the more intelligent animals get, the more they seem to be able to devise ways of tormenting each other. And also perhaps ways of showing compassion to one another. And in the human primate, this is taken, both of these potentials are taken to the greatest extreme that has ever been seen on this planet. So I want to propose what I think is very likely, but I have no way to prove, is a universal law. And I think of it as, I call it in my own mind, the law of the conservation of karma. I think of it along the same lines as the law of the conservation of matter and energy. That if there's going to be the manifestation of merit in this world, that merit's got to be made out of something. And what it can be made out of is that savagery. that mayhem. And in religion, in Buddhism, in our school of Buddhism, the way Buddhism has been transmitted through us by River Master Jiu, the way it was transmitted to her, this process is called conversion. This is not converting from one religion to another in the sense of changing an ideology or a belief or a set of practices. This is actually converting greed, hate, and delusion to compassion, love, and wisdom. And this lengthy preamble to this Dharma talk, in which I try to paint a little picture of life in the period of the dinosaurs, is a way to try to get us to imagine for a moment the scale of the stuff that can potentially be converted, the scale of the merit that can be made. You can see it in the world of the animals today. Like a lot of people, I have trouble looking at the videos that filmmakers make of animals because they tend to emphasize the animals killing each other. And there's a lot of that going on. And while I know it exists, I'd prefer not to wallow in that, and I certainly don't enjoy it. And how much less do I and most other people enjoy contemplating the deliberate savagery and cruelty that human beings inflict upon one another on a scale that animals could never imagine, much less accomplish. Yet in all that coarseness, savagery that I'm attempting to describe here, there is a vast potential for tenderness, for sympathy, for patience, for kindness, for wisdom, for benevolence. There's raw material that can be sculpted into something more divine. Its nature already is divine. All beings, all realms possess the Buddha nature. I've been talking about the leaf going where the wind blows, the wind of the eternal. That wind didn't just start blowing yesterday, nor the day before. It didn't just start blowing when I first took the precepts or when you first took the precepts. It didn't just start blowing when River Master Jiu was born, or Dogen, or Keizan, or Shakyamuni Buddha. The wind of the eternal has been blowing forever, all down through the ages, through all these worlds, some of them so savage, some of them so wild and untamed. And yet we have to consider that to that which is eternal, a few hundred million, a few billion, a few hundred billion years are nothing. The physicists say that to a photon, a particle or wave of light, however you want to think of it, which has no mass, which goes at the speed of light, it is a particle of light, that to that photon, time does not exist. It's going the maximum speed through space, and it's going the minimum speed through time. And the minimum speed is zero speed. So if that photon could wear a wristwatch, literally, its watch would never move. In contrast, we're going almost the minimum speed in space, so we're going almost the maximum speed in time. So why the hands on your wristwatch move so quickly? Well, if to a photon time does not exist, then certainly to the eternal, time either doesn't exist or is simply not a consideration factors in with any significance or importance. So all these ages, all these eons of the evolution of forms of existence, the evolution and passing away of whole types of beings, that's all nothing to the eternal. The length of time is not a consideration. So there's plenty of time, to turn that on its head, there's plenty of time for compassion and sympathy and tenderness and wisdom and love to evolve out of what may start out as seemingly utterly blind, bumping around in the dark and devouring of one another. There is literally all the time in the world. However, for one particular being, for any one particular being, there is not all the time in the world. There's only that one lifetime that that being has. And for a human being who has the very, very good fortune, it's more than good fortune, it's the fruition of the long, slow accumulation of merit over eons. For any human being who has accumulated enough merit to actually come to hear the teachings of the Buddha and even to start to practice them, there is a very great opportunity, but a very short one. A very short time in which to make the very most of this opportunity to convert as much of that stuff as possible that we've inherited from the past. And in that process, to make who knows how much merit. If the law of conservation of karma is correct, then if you want to make merit, you've got to make merit out of something. You've got to actually take something of your karmic inheritance and actually convert it. Most of the time, we may not be conscious of that process. At any time, we can only be conscious of and understand the very least bit of it. Nonetheless, it is the purpose of Buddhist training, and most particularly of the Zen training that we are doing, to get on with this and to do as thorough a job as we can possibly do in this lifetime, this precious short lifetime. Our job, if you can call it that, you could also call it our privilege, but our job is to convert as much of that raw karmic inheritance of greed, hate, and delusion into compassion, love, and wisdom, so that when we die, we don't leave as big a mess for someone else as we picked up when we were born. For those who are very serious indeed, there is a much greater aspiration to clean it all up and leave none of the mess, realizing fully one's own spiritual potential, realizing Buddhahood itself. When it's said there are no more rebirths for the one who has realized the truth fully, it means there is no more mess to be left, no more confusion that will be propagated at the end of that being's life. It doesn't mean there's nothing flowing forth from that person's life. Much to the contrary, there's a great flow of merit. Who knows what forms that merit will manifest in? Yet that merit is what that person has become. I may get the opportunity to speak about dinosaurs one more time this week. I like dinosaurs a lot, but I'm glad I don't have to live at close quarters with them. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.